The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
Tonight's show, I welcome Ed Lanuet from Shadows Fall as our special music guest. I also cover the NFL, my pigskin pick'ems, Bigfoot TV shows, NBA, college football, the top movies at the box office, and much, much more. Tonight, only on Unsigned. And welcome to the Unsigned Show here this evening. My name is Ryan. It's Tuesday night. Hopefully everything is all right with you out there. It's been a couple weeks. We've been gone, but we are back with a vengeance, just like a diehard movie, I'm telling you. We got a great show for you lined up this evening. Ed Lanuet from Shadows Fall, who's currently on tour with Shadows Fall, is the bass player for those guys. We did an interview with him several weeks back. We're finally getting permission to play that interview along with some cuts from Shadows Fall's new album as well. So definitely stick around for that. It is definitely a must listen. But a lot of other things tonight as well. And one thing I wanted to get into, and as a broadcaster, I've been broadcasting for, a little over 15 years now. And there are certain individuals who are just amazing at what they do as far as radio is concerned. Now, I'm not talking about the TV play-by-play guys. I'm talking about guys who dedicated their lives to being radio play-by-play guys, radio analysts, radio talk show hosts, DJs, what have you. This happened a few weeks ago, and it kind of brought back some great memories of my childhood, really. Jim Durham was elected to the Hall of Fame as a radio announcer who called NBA games for ESPN Radio. He died at the age of 65 years old. He worked the 2012-2013 season opener between the Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics. He joined ESPN Radio in 1996, and he was recognized by the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame for his talent. So not only is he in the Basketball Hall of Fame, he's also in the Radio Hall of Fame as well. Jim Durham, probably better known for his radio days in Chicago, calling Chicago Bulls shows from 1973 to 1991. Michael Jordan, Bulls great, said Durham's death was the voice of, basically he was the voice of champions into Chicago ESPN. Michael Jordan said, "I will miss him." I remember if you ever remember hearing the famous Craig Elo shot, the Michael Jordan shot over Craig Elo years and years ago in the early 90s, when you hear or see that clip, that's Jim Durham's voice. One of the legendary plays of the NBA, an iconic image. And I remember listening to that, hearing about his passing really saddened me, because here's a guy who called many, many games. And even just a couple years ago in the NBA Finals with Dallas and Miami, him and Dr. Buss, Dr. Jack Ramsey, calling a game on ESPN Radio, driving home one night here on 24 outside of Nashville, listening to him call, a 20-point come-from-behind win. And just the way he did it and the artistic form that he put it in. Jim Durham, one of the best ever as far as play-by-play goes in radio, and his sudden passing at the age of 65 is very sad, and I thought it was important for us to bring that up this evening. But happier horizons, I want you to just
sit back and enjoy the show.
Exactly. We got a lot of good stuff for you this evening. Spike TV is offering the largest cash prize in television history for a reality TV show. It's a $10 million Bigfoot bounty. Now, several weeks ago, I talked about a Bigfoot hunting laws in New York. Remains to be seen whether those can be put in place, but now they've got a TV show for Bigfoot bounties. Hey, Bigfoot is big business, apparently. It's a 10-hour-long episode of $10 million Bigfoot bounty. It's in pre-production right now for Spike TV, and is being assembled and will travel various locations throughout the United States, applying different methods in search for the ever-elusive Sasquatch. Spike TV is set to launch this interesting series in fall of 2013. One of the makers of the show said they hope that it actually only goes one episode. They hope somebody actually finds Bigfoot. The ever-long search for Sasquatch. Again, the Slim Jim Sasquatch could not be reached for comment. Barely legal Justin Bieber? What? It's initiated. It's, I guess it's initiation to adulthood, I guess, because a company is making his very own sex doll. It's titled Justin Bieber Blow Up Sex Doll, made by Pipe Dream Productions. The plastic bisexual boy toy, touted to be finally 18, is ready to rock your world and is modeled by Bieber lookalike wearing a sideways hat and his boyish grin. The girlfriend, singer, and pop star celebrated his 18th birthday back in March and is now in the sex toy industry celebrating Bieber's manhood with a love doll in his likeness. Meet Justin Bieber, the barely legal boy. Unbelievable. I mean, what can you say about this? You know, I mean, Pipe Dream Productions and the Bieber sex doll, though, now they're not, you know, I don't know how long this product is going to be available. The Justin Bieber toy is purchased. You can purchase it on Amazon, of all places, with price ranges from $20 to $138. I guess that depends on how big you want the orifice to be. I'm not sure. But I imagine Justin Bieber is pretty big. But I may be going a little too far with this, and that's okay, because it's Justin Bieber, right? It's not Justin Bieber. It's Justin Bieber. So it just makes me wonder how many 40, 50-year-old something, you know, sex-crave housewives are going to be buying this doll and putting on, you know, the Twilight marathon and just having a nice, quiet evening at home with Justin Bieber. Unbelievable. But in even better news, the Brooklyn Nets, formerly known as the Brooklyn Nets, are now the Brooklyn Knights. And they wanted, you know, new stadium, the Barclays Center in Brooklyn, new uniforms, new floor, new players. Of course, you got to have a new mascot, right? Well, their mascot in New Jersey was Sly. It was like kind of like a wolf rabbit type thing, you know. But now they've got a new mascot. It's the Brooklyn Knight. One thing that they overlooked here, and they wanted to kind of be a comic book type individual, you know, a nice introduction. Well, the thing is, kids, be careful with your spelling when you're looking for the Brooklyn Knight and you don't come across the identical porn star in Las Vegas named Brooklyn Knight, who's done some pretty interesting movies like Black and the Crack 4, Knocked Up a Naughty 2, and one of my favorites is the 10-man slam number 23. Imagine what the first 22 were like, right? And they have Sweet and Nasty as well. So be careful when you want to look up the Brooklyn Knight mascot. You know, the kids, you know, in the East Coast, they're like, oh, I want to go to the new Brooklyn Knight. I want to go see the new Brooklyn Nets in Brooklyn. And I want to get the mascot for Christmas. And their parents are looking up, oh, let's get the mascot. I tell you what, Jay-Z has done wonders. Can you imagine what the cheerleading crew is going to be like for the Brooklyn Knights if the mascot is the porn star? I mean, this is taking the NBA to higher levels. NBA cares, remember. Now, this is an interesting story. Mike, you're probably going to get a kick out of this, man. Now, you worked for Pizza Hut many, many, many moons ago. This former Pizza Hut employee in Des Moines, Iowa, was so ticked off about being denied a tip from a customer that he actually pulled out and urinated all over this woman's front door. And he said, you know, the lady said, I didn't have any money to tip him. Well, this individual was, you know, you're just urinated on her front door after he didn't get a tip. He was actually caught by a security camera in the apartment complex. The Pizza Hut manager who, you know, was shown the footage, said that he was, you know, the employee is no longer employed with Pizza Hut. And come to find out, pizza delivery guys is the third most hazardous job in the United States, behind police officer and taxi driver. Police officer, taxi driver, pizza delivery guy. Third most dangerous, hazardous job in America. So these guys, you know, have a dangerous job. They get mugged and, you know, car wrecks and all kinds of stuff. You know, they work on tips. So avoid having your front door urinated on. Tip your pizza guy. And if you're wondering, how much should I tip the pizza guy? You can always go to tipthepizzaguy.com for some helpful tips there. But hey, another great story. I thought we're on a roll here with these stories. I'm telling you, like I said, they write themselves. They really, really do. This is an interesting name for an album, in my opinion. It's Donkey Punch the Night. Rock and metal music, greatest workaholic, Maynard James Keenan has announced the upcoming release for Pussifer. This is set to be released sometime in 2013, possibly actually February 19th, 2013, excuse me. It will consist of 8 different tracks. EP will showcase the talents of Maynard James Keenan and singer-songwriter Karina Round, and also a small sample of covers as well. Also is going to feature the same lineup that was on a 2011 album, Conditions of My Parole. Out of the 8 tracks featured on the record, there will be 2 original songs, Breathe and Dear Brother. Donkey Punch the Night will also house various remixes of Queen's Bohemian Rhapsody and accepts Balls to the Wall. Keenan spoke about the inclusion of the 2 covers in the band's forthcoming EP. He said, well, continuing our tradition of releasing new songs at the same time, Keenan explained, I had an itch that needed scratching, and the itch was Balls to the Wall, which was followed by an even harder to reach itch known as Bohemian Rhapsody, and scratch that itch. We did. You know, you're really onto something when you can name your EP Donkey Punch the Night. That's one thing that's going to give you.
The only thing I'm addicted to right now is winning, you know?
Yeah, exactly. If you can name your EP coming out in February, Donkey Punch the Night, you have succeeded. Well done. Hats off to you. Now, that concludes our early part of the show this evening. And stick around. The Ed Lanuet interview is coming up right now. But before we get to that, I want to play a track off the Shadows Fall album. They're currently touring right now on, and later this winter into spring, they're going to be touring with Killswitch Engage. So definitely check your local listings for that. This is off the very new album called Fire from the Sky. It is Unknown Shadows Fall here on Unsigned. Appreciate taking the time, man.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime.
I appreciate it. Now, many people may not know this. You've been playing bass for over 30 years, graduated from Berkeley. If you could tell us, you know, how you first got, you know, started playing bass and really developing an interest in music.
Yeah, I started playing bass. Actually, I was very young in elementary school, and I started on the cello. We actually, teacher had enough saxophone players, and he had... I was a little tiny thing, so I really couldn't play a full-size three-quarter size bass. So he put me on a cello. We tuned it like a bass, and I played the Royal March, one note, whole notes, for the whole entire concert, and that was my debut. And it just stuck. I immediately wanted more. I couldn't stand the saxophone. I wanted nothing to do with anything that involved me blowing air. I'd rather use my fingers and my hands. So I just gravitated to the bass, and it's been history ever since. I just immediately just went steadily progressed from the stringed instruments or the acoustic string instruments, uprights, to electric. And I've been doing it, yeah, it's over 30 years now.
Very cool, man. Now, is there, you know, obviously your music interest is very diverse, which is great. Is there certain songs other than, you know, being in the school band, certain songs that really captured your interest or first songs you learned to play on bass, as far as whether it be jazz or rock or metal?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I was a huge metalhead. My family, my cousins we were all pretty tight knit family. They had got me turned on to Black Sabbath, Ozzy, and Black Sabbath at the time, and Pink Floyd, and things of that nature, and it immediately grabbed me into wanting to be able to play like that. Geezer Butler was like probably the first that just, he was like a magnet to me. Once I heard him play that bass, I was like, I have to be able to do that. I have to do that. So I just started learning every Sabbath tune I could, and once I started to do that, it really kind of went like a domino effect. I went from, you know, the Sabbath stuff to the Pink Floyd stuff to the AC/DC to the Yes to, you know, to Rush, of course, because, I mean, every bass player loves Rush. And I went into jazz. The jazz end of it came later when I started to really need to step up my game, and I had this desire to be better as a player and to really understand what it was that I was doing. Jazz became the teacher, and I had to start seeking out the players that were the legends, the true legends, you know, the underworld legends. So gotcha. Then came Jaco and so on and so forth.
Now, again, very diverse music. And you mentioned Rush, and I saw on your website one of your top five albums listed mm-hmm. is Rush, Permanent Waves. Now, a question for you. How do you feel about these guys still not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Well, I don't really I really don't think much of it, to be honest with you. Nothing bad against the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I'm sure they have their agenda and their reasons for doing what they're doing. But if they can't tell that those guys deserve to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I don't know who does. And, you know, to me, you know, music is very subjective. I mean, some people may like it, some people may not. And then also it's one of those things where, you know, they just may not think they're worthy because maybe they don't dig what they do, but there are so many that do, and they've influenced so many that I think the people that really matter, it's irrelevant. It's kind of laughable, really, you know, I think it's just kind of laughable that they're not.
Yeah, man, we've talked about it on the show, at least for the last year and a half now, and I think they're finally on the ballot this year, so it looks like the writers at Rolling Stones have kind of pulled their head out of their ass, so to speak, and were like, oh, maybe mm-hmm. we should put the top five selling rock band of all time on the ballot for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It's really bizarre in that people are in there that you go, huh, okay, sure, but Rush isn't. It's very strange. Mm-hmm. I think we're right in line there as far as, you know, they have their agenda. They do their, you know, their big rock show, and, you know, they'll syndicate it on HBO and all that stuff, which is all well and good for, you know, commercial success and all those things. But moving on, you've been really busy touring with Shadows Fall this on their fall tour as their touring bass player. How has that experience been for you, man?
Oh, it's been unbelievable. It's been amazing. I have grown very fond of those guys. Jason and I have known each other for a while, playing with Frank Oresti from Face Warning in his solo project called Dark Day Sunday. And touring with Shads has been up and over the top. I mean, just awesome, hardworking guys. I mean, it's been a blast. It's been a blast. I can't wait to go back out. We're leaving November 7th, I believe we leave again. So we've got some great things coming up, and the tours just seem to get bigger and bigger. So the album looks like it's doing well. So,
yeah, man, these guys, they're notorious for being good guys and obviously been making great music for a lot longer than maybe some people realize. How were you approached by them? Was just kind of, you know, friend of a friend kind of thing? I mean, it just kind of happened for you?
It was kind of a friend of a friend. I mean, I had worked with Frank Oresti on his project, and, you know, we did some Dream Theater shows. We had some of those booked, and, you know, one day, you know, Jason was a part of that project, and one day Jason said to me, "Hey, we lost our bass player for this Alice in Chains cover gig, and we need someone to come in to play an hour's worth of music by Friday," and I think it was Monday or Tuesday. And, you know, I was like, well, I'm a huge Alice fan. I love those guys. I mean, the music is amazing, well-written stuff. I mean, it's in my head, so it should have been no big deal, and it wasn't. We got together that, I think it was a Friday night, and we played it flawlessly, and it went perfect. And Jay was, he was happy, and he was like, "Would you ever want to play bass for Shadows Fall?" And I said, no-brainer. Yeah, sure. So, off we go, and we did that last tour with Fear Factory, Noise in the Machine tour, and onward and upward. That's what we're doing. So
awesome, man. Very good stuff. Now, hanging out, you know, kind of being new, you know, not necessarily new, but, you know, hanging out with them on this tour, any guys in the band play jokes or any pranks on one another at all?
Oh, God, it's nonstop. It's nonstop. I mean, yeah, the bus hijinks are constantly going on, and of course, you know, there's all kinds of just catchphrases and things that we say to each other, and it's mostly pressing buttons, getting people fired up. We try to get each other fired up, get each other mad about something silly, you know, but it really doesn't work. Nobody really gets – no one really seems to get mad because everybody knows we're doing it to, you know, have fun, so – but it's been prank city. John, guitar player, he's notorious for doing some funny things. He has some rabbit ears that he wears once in a while, and, you know, just pops his head out and looks at you with the gazing rabbit stare with those ears on, and you just can't stop laughing. So, you know, there's all kinds of things.
Very cool, man. Well, definitely keep it lighthearted on the road, a lot of travel, and obviously playing a lot of shows. Now, playing with Shadows Fall Live, is there a certain song or a group of songs that you really love? Like when the playlist comes to you, you're like, oh yeah, man, I'm totally stoked with this. There are certain songs that from Shadows Fall that you just can't wait to play every night.
Yeah, the new album. I mean, I love their older stuff. One of the tunes that we put in the set this tour is called "Of One Blood," and I believe that's "Art of Balance." And I really like that tune, and it's one of their older tunes. And that tune I get really excited about because we're doing some things that are a little bit different than they've done in the past, where the bass, me being the bass, and John being the lead guitar player, where I'm actually doubling some of his solos. And I'm not sure how familiar you are with a guy named Steve Morse, but they used to do some stuff like that back in the day with a bass player named Jerry Peake. So when they had asked me if I could double it instead of doing a harmony for the live thing, I was like, yeah, sure, let's give it a shot. And, you know, One Blood was one of those tunes that you get real excited about playing because you get to, you know, in metal, bass isn't like in the forefront very often. And when you get a chance to step out, I get those opportunities in a couple of tunes with these guys, and it's really awesome because every instrument is recognized, which I appreciate. In a lot of metal bands, you don't get that. You know, it's mostly just guitar, drums, vocals, and the bass is kind of just there, you know? Yeah. So "Of One Blood" is a great tune where I get to step out, and no pun intended, but the next tune I was going to mention is "Stepping Outside the Circle," is another tune where I get to kind of, there's a solo section of sorts for the bass player that builds up just before the guitar solo, where I just get to burn. and just build it up for Johnny to take off and do his thing. So more of a, you know, a general song thing of, you know, using the bass to build the momentum a little bit. But it's really cool to be able to do those types of things with them. So yeah, there's a bunch of songs though. I mean, I could go on and on and on, but one of the ones off the new album of, it's called Nothing Remains, is very Sabbath-esque. I love that tune. I just love it. Well-written, good feel, and very like a Sabbath-y type of vibe with their flair, which impresses me to no end because there's not a lot of bands that really capture that feel.
Very cool, man. Yeah, Shadows Fall is definitely they have their own sound, and again, you know, from Art of Balance, and even before that, and the new album is really, really solid. And I'm glad that people are getting interested in seeing you guys and hearing Shadows Fall live, because I've been fortunate enough to see them several times live, and they are really, really great live, man. I'm definitely sure with you playing bass with them, it's just as good, man. Now, your favorite thing about touring, playing live shows, is there certain things that you look forward to? Obviously, you know, being in front of crowds, those type of things. Is there certain things about being on the road and being in front of crowds that you really, really look forward to?
Yeah, I mean, being on the road, the most important thing for me is that I get to play my bass. I mean, I know that sounds kind of simple, but I'm pretty much a simple kind of guy. I love to play my bass. And playing it in different places is like one of my life's goals, as many different places as I can, wherever it takes me, kind of a thing. So I really look forward to being on the road and playing with them in different venues, seeing new things, meeting new people, and getting a chance to play bass for them. And I hate to sound like I'm just playing the bass, because I'm not, you know, I'm not just doing that. I'm playing in a band, but in my mindset, I love to do that, and that's what keeps me going and keeps me wanting to do more. You know, so.
Yeah, but I think, you know, if you're doing what you love, man, it's not even work. It's just, you're just doing it because you just do it. It doesn't seem like work.
Exactly,
it's having
right.
fun, you know,
that's
the peak, you know, if for everyone out there, I think, you know, if you're doing what you love and it doesn't feel like work, and then you're doing exactly what you should be doing at that moment in time. Now, you guys have had some unwanted excitement on this tour as well. Hopefully this wasn't one of the pranks at all, but you guys actually had a bus, one of your tour buses caught fire. Is that right?
Yeah. It was definitely unwanted. It wasn't a prank. We had been, I, to be honest, I don't even remember where we were, but we were sitting on the bus. We had a day off, and you know, we had our typical just kind of hanging around. We had all gotten something to eat, and we were watching some TV, just chilling out. And the guys from God Forbid, a few of them were on the bus with us, and we were just sitting there watching the television, as I said. And then some guy comes up along the bus, and you know, we do get kind of weird when we see people kind of hanging around the bus. But he wasn't saying anything. He wasn't doing anything. He was just kind of pointing. So we're kind of peeking out at him like, hey, who are you? Get lost, you know, leave us alone, go away. Not, you know, we're not normally like that, but he just seemed to be kind of hovering, being weird. So finally, Willis, the drum tech for God Forbid for Corey Pierce, he had stuck his head out and said, hey, what's up? And the guy's like, I think your bus is on fire. Well, sure enough, we get off the bus and we look inside the generator bay, and it was lit up like a pumpkin, like, you know, like the you know, they had the vents for the generator bay. You could see in there where the fire was going, and it was pretty exciting. So Steve Lagudi, the sound engineer for the tour, he had some fireman experience. I think he actually said he was a fireman at one point. So he's like, follow me. And I'm like, okay. We popped the hatch, and smoke was billowing out of there. Fortunately, it wasn't a huge, huge fire. It was just a small piece of insulation from the generator bay that fell onto the exhaust pipe and caught fire. We managed to put it out, luckily for the tour bus and us. Tour bus has two generators, so we just shut that one down, and we started up the other one and managed to press on. So it was cool. Worked out. Nobody got hurt. No smoke inhalation or anything like that. So we kind of got lucky.
Yeah, I'm glad no one was hurt, man, and definitely, you know, a scary situation, but again, you know, I kind of laugh about it now, like, hey, you know, bus fire, you know, roll on.
Yeah, exactly. Now, well, the interesting thing about that is that we had sent the text to Dino from Fear Factory, and we said, and they were tweeting about how they were rehearsing, and we had said, well, you know, that's that's great. You guys had a great rehearsal. Our bus is on fire. Well, we received zero sympathy from them. They said, oh, welcome to the club. Ours burnt down to the ground in Europe 2 years ago. So they were like, yeah, you're fine. Don't want to hear it. You know? So it was definitely one of those things where they were like, as long as you're all right, you know. So, but it does happen from time to time with those things, you know. So.
Now, you guys have been on a small break in the tour, taking some time away. You picked the tour back up in Virginia, I believe, on the 8th. The crowd seems to have been very good. Buzz about the album has been great. How excited are you guys to get back on the second part of this tour, man?
Well, of course, we can't wait to get started again. I mean, the crowds have been awesome. The turnout has been great. The VIPs have, you know, the VIP sign-ons for the shows have been awesome. We get to meet a lot of great people that way, sign autographs and the prize packs that we're giving away at each show. So, yeah, we're real excited about getting back out there.
Very cool, man. Now, Shadows Fall, you know, the new album just came out this past spring into summer, titled Fires from the Sky. They did a video for the song Unknown as well. Is that a... you mentioned a bunch of songs that you really enjoy playing. This is kind of the song they did the video for. One, have you had a chance to view the video? And what have some other songs off the new album that you really enjoy playing?
Yeah, I have. I've seen the video. Unknown is a great song to play live. Fire from the Sky, we did that on the last tour with Fear Factory, which went over really well. Like I said, Nothing Remains is a great tune. I love that one. Divide and Conquer is a great song. I love playing that live. Good one. I mean, I have to be honest that, and I hate to say this because I'm part of the camp, but I really like every song on the record. There really isn't anything I don't like. I hate to say it because it sounds a little bit conceited, you know, that I'm pushing the album because I am, but I really do like every tune on the record.
No, I don't think you're out of line by any means. There, we've talked about on the show numerous times about how we really enjoy bands still making albums, you know, mm-hmm. and putting together, you know, 9, 10, 12 tracks. And, you know, this is a project, and we, you know, it's a full project as opposed to, you know, singles are great and you know, one or two songs are great, but I appreciate bands that are still going out there and making solid albums from front to back. You could, you know, put it on your iPod, your CD player, or whatever you're listening to, and enjoy it from start to finish and not go, oh, yeah, that song, yeah, skip that, you know. Mm-hmm. Solid music. And it seems like, you know, Shadows Fall, they've always done that, in my opinion, and really good stuff, man. I'm glad you guys are hitting the States and getting this tour, hitting it hard, man. People are taking notice. I really dig it.
So I appreciate that, and I know the guys appreciate that as well. So, like I said, we're looking forward to getting back out there and then playing all the tunes that we can for everyone. But we're real excited about meeting up with Killswitch out in the West Coast. That's going to be a great tour. And like I said, there's going to be more big things on the horizons. The horizon, the tours keep getting bigger and bigger. So you look awesome. look for us climbing the ladder again.
Right on, man. I'm definitely looking forward to it. Now, kind of switching gears on you a little bit. Now, you have another music project, King Whack, that you started back in the late 90s, I believe in 99. And you guys were on break for a little while and kind of got back together in 2010. Now, obviously, you're touring with Shadows Fall. You know, future plans with King Whack, anything you want to, you know, mention as far as what future plans? You guys are obviously kind of on a hiatus right now, right?
Yeah, well, King Whack is very dear to my heart because my friend Rob and I are really good friends, and we worked together professionally for a long time. And King Whack has always been one of those things where we write all the time, whether I'm with Shads or Dark Day or whatever I'm doing, I'm always thinking of ideas for King Whack, and Rob does the same. So it's more like a writing project when we're not performing or getting together to play. But, with this new schedule, with Shad's coming about, it's obviously going to be tailored towards the breaks. So when the breaks come about, Rob and I will get together and, you know, maybe line up some shows for King Whack, which I'm sure would be down towards Kentucky area somewhere.
Yeah, well, that's not too far from my neck of the woods, man. So, and Rob is how me and you kind of got together and got you on the show. And really cool dude, man. I've had a chance and pleasure to speak with him on the phone a couple times via email and stuff. Really cool guy, man. So, I mean, if you guys ever have a project or anything going on, like I said, I'm in the Nashville area. So definitely let me know, man. I'm always down for a road trip, man.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, we'd love to have you out. Absolutely. Yeah, King Whack, I think you'll probably see that eventually. Doing a couple of shows somewhere, and they may not be a string of shows, maybe one-offs too, you know, a couple here and there, but, you know, we do get out from time to time when we get the chance, and, you know, like I said, we enjoy playing the stuff. It's more for, you know, for fun for Rob and I to kind of rekindle that thing, you know.
Very cool, man. Well, hey, Ed, I appreciate you taking the time, man. Best of luck to you on the second part of this tour, man, and if people want to get a hold of you, your website, and you know, find out what Shadows Fall are up to on tour, how can they do that?
Well, you can check me out at eBass Online. It's my new website I just put up for all those theory buffs and all those bass players that really want to learn what they're doing. I kind of am giving away everything I learned from Musicians Institute all the way up to getting my master's degree. I'm putting it all out there for people to learn. But if you want to get in touch with me, you can get in touch with me there. And also you can get in touch with me through the Shadows Fall website as well.
Very cool. Well, hey, Ed, best of luck to you, man. And definitely keep us posted on how the tour's going. And we'll be in touch, man. Take care.
Hey, thank you very much. And I appreciate the interview.
That is Ed Lanuet from Shadows Fall stopping in, doing an interview with us here on Unsigned. Very cool stuff. And again, thanks to the guys from Shadows Fall. And, of course, Ed as well. And here is a track, a song that he actually talked about during the interview, was Stepping Outside the Circle. This is off the Art of Balance CD here on Unsigned. Shadows Fall here on Unsigned. Stepping Outside the Circle, that is off the Art of Balance CD, which came out in 2002. Hard to believe that album is, pushing 10 years old. Unbelievable. Actually, it is 10 years old, pushing past 10 years old at this point. And they were nominated for a Grammy as well for that album in 2002, and also a three-time nominated band for a Grammy. So, again, thanks to Ed Lanuet, Brian, and Matt from Shadows Fall for working with us, getting those songs, and also Ed for doing an interview for us while they're actually on tour. But right now, it is time for our Pigskin Pick'ems here.
All start, offense. Everyone but the center.
You play to win the game. Hello? You play to win the game.
Playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs. You kidding me? Playoffs?
Congratulations. See you in Pittsburgh.
Can't wait.
That's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
NFL Week 11. What a week it has been in the NFL. I'll tell you what, we didn't do a show the last couple weeks, but I kept track of my picks. Right now, heading into this week, I was 74-38-1 because of the tie in San Francisco with St. Louis. I went 10-3 this week, leaving me at 84-41-1 on the season. And this is a recap of this week's games. A Thursday night game, I actually picked correct. This is only the second time I've picked a winner on Thursday Night Football since week three. The Bills get a much-needed win at home against the Miami Dolphins, and Ryan Tannehill did much look like a rookie Thursday night. He did not have a very good ball game whatsoever. The Bills at home finally get a win. The Packers score two times in the final 2 minutes in the Motor City to upset the Detroit Lions. Playoff hopes for the Lions, I think, at this point are definitely on the ground. That lion has no roar. The Falcons, it wasn't pretty, but you know what? They never say it has to be pretty to win in the NFL, and the Falcons win at home after a very gutty effort by the Arizona Cardinals. And the Browns and the Cowboys. Everybody knows I'm a Browns fan. Some people ask me, why? Why on earth are you a Browns fan? But I am, just kind of how it happened, you know? But the Cowboys, deep breath. Whew. Tell ya, the Cowboys snuck away with this one. The Browns front four has 7 sacks. Tony Romo has a 3-point lead with less than a minute to go, and the Browns find a way to lose like they always do in overtime, 23-20. I tell you, unbelievable. I mean, the Browns had over 120 yards with the penalties. 10 of those penalties went to first downs that contributed to first downs to the Cowboys that extended drives as well. It was just hard to see this team not win close games. It's really, really frustrating. And they host Pittsburgh this week. We'll see how that goes. Redskins. Wow. What can you say about RG3? I mean, you want to talk about destroying a once Super Bowl hopeful team in the Philadelphia Eagles, who have lost 6 games in a row now. The first time they've lost that many games since 1999, which was Andy Reid's very first year of coaching. Coincidentally enough, more than likely this will be Andy Reid's last year of coaching, in Philadelphia. The Rams taking on the Jets. This is a game I thought the Rams would win playing at home. The Jets, you never know what you're going to get for this team. They go on the road and get a big-time win. So the Jets on life support, but they get a win. Holy Tim Tebow and a bag of donuts. The Chiefs. How bad are the Kansas City Chiefs? They're really, really bad. When fans are passing out paper bags in the stands, yes, things are bad. Your team is not very good. Coach Romeo Crennel, even he wasn't that bad when he was in Cleveland years and years ago. They have fans leaving at halftime is how bad Kansas City is. They got blown out by the Cincinnati Bengals at home. Unbelievable. Kansas City is awful. They have one win on the season. I'll be lucky if they get any more than just that one win. The Texans. Wow. And I don't think anybody thought the Jacksonville Jaguars, with Chad Henne at quarterback, going to Texas to take on the big bad Texans, would have an offensive explosion, but they did. A big-time game, record-setting performance. The Houston Texans became the first team in NFL history to score 2 times in an overtime. So, again, Texans win in overtime in a shootout, a straight-out shootout against Jacksonville. The Saints. The Saints are on a roll. They started off 0-4, and they've kind of – now they're at 500, at 5-5. The meat of the schedule is going to be very, very tough, though. They have the Giants, 49ers, Falcons still on the schedule to go, and they still have to play Tampa as well. A wild card spot is far off cry for the Saints. But if they run the table, they are a very dangerous team, a team you definitely don't want to see as a wild card. The Denver Broncos, Peyton Manning, I tell you what, he's my MVP of the season. Enough can't be said about how amazing. This guy didn't play a whole year because of three neck surgeries. He's coming back and has played outstanding. I mean, he has been outstanding. And Sunday, he passed Dan Marino for second all-time on the touchdown throw list in the NFL. He's now chasing Brett Favre for the record. New England Patriots roll up 59 points against the Indianapolis Colts. The big news here is for the New England Patriots, they lose tight end Gronkowski for 4 to 6 weeks with a broken forearm. Remains to be seen if he's going to be able to come back in time for the playoffs. The Ravens, Steelers. I thought the Ravens would win this just because of the simple fact the Steelers have issues at quarterback. Big Ben Roethlisberger is out, and now Byron Leftwich, who started that game, is also going to be out as well. And the Steelers, the wide receivers, didn't help their quarterback at all with drop passes. The Ravens defense, not the same old Ravens defense you've come to know and love. Well, I don't necessarily love it, but they're always pretty good. But I tell you what, they still hit really hard. Ed Reed has actually got suspended for a game for hard hits. I didn't really think that it was that out of bounds of a hit. It looked like it just a good old-fashioned NFL football hit. The NFL has really changed a lot as far as safeties and corners being allowed to come up and hit guys, and they're really protecting receivers. I think maybe a little too much, a little cautious to issue fines and suspensions now. But the Ravens pull out a much-needed win in Pittsburgh and take sole possession of first place in the AFC North. Monday Night Football, what can you say? The Bears with Jason Campbell looked awful. Jason Campbell couldn't wait to get back to Chicago. There's a guy on the San Francisco 49ers defense. You may not have heard of him. His name is Alden Smith. This is his second year in the NFL. They put a stat up, and I love John Gruden. Some people don't like John Gruden. I love John Gruden calling games. He is really into it. He is a football fan, you can tell. And they put up a stat. Now, Reggie White, I think collectively everybody thinks Reggie White is the best defensive end to ever really play football. All-time sack leader. Reggie White had 31 sacks in his first 2 years of football. This kid, Alden Smith, had 5.5 sacks alone last night, a record for Monday Night Football, and is third on that list with 27.5 sacks, and there's still 6 games to go in his second season. Put that in perspective. Reggie White, 31 sacks, 30 to 31 sacks in his first 2 seasons. This guy, Alden Smith, is pushing 28 sacks with 6 games to go in his second season. Unbelievable talent in San Francisco. I guess it helps when you have that type of talent on defense, Patrick Willis and company, the safeties and corners. I mean, that San Francisco 49ers defense, I really like what they did last night, and they look tough when they play like they did last night. And Colin Kaepernick, unbelievable, getting his very first start in Monday Night Football, and he looked anything but a second-year quarterback. I mean, he looked like a seasoned veteran. He looked very, very good. Quarterback controversy in San Francisco remains to be seen. Heading into this week, now I haven't been very good at picking Thursday night games, and well, you know what, it's Thanksgiving and there are 3 games on Thursday night, so bear with me. My picks have been pretty solid all year, but Thursday nights have been a little tricky. Turkey Day celebration, you're going to have your turkey, you're going to have your stuffing, you're going to, I don't know, hang out with your family. So if you're not passed out from tryptophan or you haven't drank yourself being passed out bearing with your in-laws, and hey, you may want to check out some football games, right? Hey, the Lions versus the Texans. Texas heading up to Detroit. A lot of people are going to pick the Texans on this. I'm telling you what, on Turkey Day, I expect Ngannou Sue to stomp somebody like he did last year. Okay, maybe he's not going to stomp anybody, but he's definitely going to hit someone. I think this Lions team is going to stand up. The Lions always play tough on Thanksgiving. I think the Lions get a much-needed win and upset the Texans who visit the Motor City. Redskins, Cowboys, big division game. This is really this is a toss-up to me because I don't know what to expect from the Cowboys team after watching them play the Browns last week, but RG3 is phenomenal. With that being said, Rob Ryan's defense in Dallas, that 3-4 defense with the corners and DeMarcus Ware, I think they're going to find a way to contain RG3. I'm going to take the Cowboys in a very, very close football game. And late night, Thanksgiving, if you haven't, you know, you had enough football yet, haven't had enough of the all the trimmings, I'll tell you what, you have New England Patriots against the New York Jets, primetime football. Yeah, I think this is going to be a much-watched football game if you're still awake at that in that late evening. And, hey, send people out to do Black Friday shopping at late prime time and, you know, huddle up and watch some football. With that being said, I'm taking the Patriots at home in a very, very good primetime game Thanksgiving night. Titans, Jaguars. Titans coming off a bye week. The Jaguars playing as good as they did in Houston. With that being said, I expect the Titans to play and look as sharp as they have all season coming out of a bye week. I'm taking the Titans on the road in Jacksonville. The Bills versus the Colts. Look, the Bills have been awful on the road dating back to last season. The Colts got humbled last week in Foxborough. I'm taking the Colts as a bounce back and a shootout in Indianapolis. Browns, Steelers. Now, the Steelers are on their third starting quarterback heading to Cleveland. Now, a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, this was a heated rivalry. It really was. Since the Browns have been back in the NFL since 99, it hasn't really been much of a rivalry. It really hasn't. The Browns have had double-digit loss seasons in all but three seasons since 1999. They are 1-15 against teams in their division in the AFC North in the last 3 years. With that being said, I'm taking the Browns at home. I can't pick the Steelers. Browns at home and a win. Raiders, Bengals. The Bengals, I tell you what, the Bengals are still in the playoff hunt at 5-5, hosting the Raiders, who nothing as good has come out of Oakland this year. This team is banged up. They don't play defense. The Raiders are a mess. I'm taking the Bengals at home. Broncos heading to play the Chiefs. Look, this is an easy pick for anyone out there. This is probably the lock of the week as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, Kansas City has probably got a proud defense, but you know what? The Denver Broncos have Peyton Manning. He's playing at an MVP-type level, and this Chiefs team has just been bad all year. Bust out your paper bags, Chiefs fans, because it's going to be a drubbing at the hands of Peyton Manning. Seahawks, Dolphins. Seahawks are on a bye week heading to Miami to take on the Dolphins. Look, I like the Seattle Seahawks defense as a whole, really. That front four, that defense as a whole is very, very tough. Ryan Tannehill, I think, is hitting the rookie wall, as they say. I look for the Seahawks to get a big-time win on the road in South Beach. Falcons heading to Tampa Bay. Look, this Tampa Bay team has been on a roll. The Falcons have been kind of teetering. They lost that game in New Orleans. Oh, they should have lost against the Cardinals. I'll tell you what, they're getting into the really meat of their schedule right now. I'm taking the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in an upset at home over the Falcons. Vikings, Bears. This is an NFC North battle. The Bears got humiliated on Monday Night Football. I expect them to come home. The Vikings, coming off a bye week, Adrian Peterson is going to have a rough day. I think the Bears are really going to load the box and force Christian Ponder to try to beat them with his arm. I don't know if he's able to do that at this point in his career in his second season. I'm taking the Bears at home. Ravens, Chargers. In the land of sunshine and Norv Turner, I say. Stay classy, Phillip Rivers. Stay classy. I'm taking the Ravens all the way in this one. No brainer there. You have the Rams, Cardinals. Look, the Cardinals have major issues at quarterback. I'm taking the Rams on the road in a very close and very ugly football game. So I guess if you're bored and you want to watch some really ugly football, that's the game for you. Saints, 49ers. Saints hosting the 49ers. Excuse me. This is a must win for the Saints if they're going to make a playoff push. But I just don't see it. I think this 49ers defense is going to put the clamps on Drew Brees, or at least as much as they can. They're going to limit his opportunities downfield. They're going to keep every underneath. And I really think the 49ers are just a better football team overall. I'm thinking the 49ers to get a victory in New Orleans. Packers, Giants. This is a primetime game. Look, this is going to be a good one. This is really a game that both teams must really have. The Giants and the Packers are trying to win their divisions to get home field, whether it be in divisional or wild card play. So at that point, especially if the Cowboys win Thanksgiving night, if the Cowboys win, they'll only be a half game behind the Giants. So this is a big-time win. And same game goes for the Packers as well, if the Bears win their game early Sunday as well. So this is a big-time win for both teams, really. But that being said, I'm taking the Giants over the Packers at home coming out of a bye week. Monday Night Football, this, you want to talk about ugly football, the Carolina Panthers taking on the Philadelphia Eagles. Wow. Again, there were starts since 1999 under Andy Reid. It's had a rough season. Let's not forget what Andy Reid has really been through this season. He lost the death of his son to open the season. The NFL is a big business, I understand. The Eagles team is a mess. With that being said, I'm going to take the Panthers on the road in an upset, I guess, at this point. Even though the Eagles have been absolutely dreadful, I'm taking the Panthers on Monday night. Let's move on to the NBA now. The NBA season about a month along now, and really the season moving right along. A lot of good play, some interesting storylines as well. Great games, buzzer beaters galore all over the place. Let's start with James the Beard Harden being traded from Oklahoma City to Houston. I'm wondering if the Oklahoma City think they traded the wrong guy away. Look, this guy in his first two games in a Houston uniform scored 86 points in his first two games. The only other people to score that many or more points in their first two games with a team in the NBA were Michael Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain. That's very, very good company. Houston's playing very solid basketball right now. I don't know if they're necessarily a playoff team, but maybe James Harden will put them on the edge and get them in the playoffs. The Cleveland Cavaliers rookie of the year, Kyrie Irving, he's going to be out a month now with a broken finger. The Cavs have been fun to watch. It hasn't translated in a lot of wins for them, unfortunately. Now with Kyrie Irving out for a month, the burden becomes even more for rookie Deion Waiters, who really reminds me of a very young Joe Dumars as well, a guy who can really just score in bunches. But without Kyrie Irving, the Cavs, they're not going to win very many games in the next 30 days. I don't think they're going to win many games really this season. It looks like they're going to be another lottery team unless they make a trade midway through the season, which I see them probably doing. This team just, they have no bench. That's basically what it comes down to. They have a really nice young nucleus. They really have no bench. The San Antonio Spurs, steady as it goes. Same old, same. Greg Popovich, Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and Tony Parker and company, Kawhi Leonard, Danny Green, you know, Steven Jackson. The list goes on and on. These guys are deep. They're talented. I look for them to have number one, two, or three seed in the West when playoff time comes. And LeBron James, need I say more? I mean, this guy has been unbelievable. He's the best player in basketball. I don't like the way it's been a couple of years. He got his ring. Good for him. But look, hey, he's the best player in basketball, and he's proven it. He's carrying that Miami Heat team, and they have a lot of talent. I don't know who's going to beat them when it comes time for a championship this summer. Another rookie to look out for, Damian Leonard, point guard for the Portland Trail Blazers, played at Weber State, was a scoring machine in college, but really is an all-around player. My fear with this young gentleman is that once the scouting report starts to come out on him and people start trapping his high pick and rolls, I wonder how he's going to adjust to that once the scouting report comes out on him, that, you know, trapping him on high pick and rolls and those type of things are really going to frustrate him a lot. They have a nice coaching staff there in Portland and some other nice players, Nicholas Batum and company. LaMarcus Aldridge, I think, are going to help him coax through some of those issues he's going to have on traps and high pick and roll situations. And you can't talk about NBA and not talk about the Los Angeles Lakers, right? Drama, drama, drama there. They fire former Cleveland Cavs coach Mike Brown 5 games into the season. Unbelievable. And then you think they're going to hire Phil Jackson back. No, they hired Mike D'Antoni, who's recovered from knee surgery and is going to join the team sometime next week. I don't know. This Lakers team has a lot of talent. I just don't know. I just don't know. They're old. They have some older players, Steve Nash, Kobe Bryant, Ron Artest. These guys have played a lot of basketball. Pau Gasol is getting up there as well. Big guys in the NBA don't age gracefully. But you get into your low to mid-30s in the NBA, you just don't age gracefully. It's a lot of wear and tear on your legs, your knees, your back. You know, I just don't know how effective this team is going to be come crunch time. And they really don't have a very athletic nucleus coming off the bench that can really give them a spark or energy. And I don't see them having the capability to really make any moves or trades or do anything salary cap wise. They don't have any draft picks. They've traded them all away. So I think they're just going to have to work with what they have and see what happens in Los Angeles. Two other teams I want to mention before we move on from the NBA, and that is the New York Knicks and the Memphis Grizzlies, two best records in the NBA. New York Knicks, much surprised, started off 7-0. It'll be interesting to see what happens when Amari Stoudemire comes back from the knee injury, whether they have him come off the bench, which I think they should have Amari Stoudemire come off the bench. It gives them a scoring option and a nice body off the bench because that starting five has a nice nucleus. They're winning basketball games. You don't mess with your starting five if you're winning and have the best record in basketball. I'm sorry. He's just going to have to suck it up. I know they're paying him a lot of money, but you know what? There's a lot of great players that come off the bench. He's going to have to suck it up, swallow his pride a little bit and say, hey, you know what? Winning is more important than my contract. And that's whether he's willing to do that or not remains to be seen in New York. Moving on, college football and the BCS mess. What in the heck is going on? It seems like we have this talk every year, right? Unbelievable. 2 weeks ago, Alabama gets beat on their own field by a true freshman quarterback from Texas A&M. They dropped from the number one ranking. leaving three unbeatens left coming into this weekend. Kansas State, the Oregon Ducks, and the Fighting Irish of Notre Dame. No SEC teams in a national title for the first time in 6 years? What? I thought everyone at ESPN's head just exploded. They all just completely passed out from nowhere. No SEC team in the national title? You know, that's what everyone at ESPN did. They all just gagged, you know, and then these teams started losing. They're like, whew, now we can push and lobby to have all the SEC teams in the top 10. Get them all in there. But look, Kansas State got mauled by the Baylor Bears. The Ducks filed for AFLAC in their loss to Stanford in overtime, leaving Notre Dame the lone unbeaten team, except for one other team out there, and that is the Ohio State Buckeyes. Undefeated, 11-0, they cannot partake in postseason play because of actions of former players and Jim Tressel. Because of this Buckeyes team has nothing to do with what happened two years ago with Jim Tressel and former players. But this group of seniors, freshmen, sophomores, and juniors are being punished for their undefeated season. I don't like it at all, but it is what it is, and those are the rules they have in place for NCAA. So my question is this. In these next 1 or 2 weeks, when Michigan gets exposed again when they play another solid opponent, which is Ohio State, and they get embarrassed on national television again because they have three losses already, you might as well give them another one because they're going to get one Saturday. I wonder who has the guts in the AP poll to vote Ohio State national champion when they're the only unbeaten left, especially if Notre Dame loses to USC this week. Who's got the guts to do it? I want to see someone do it and say, you know what? Only undefeated team in FBS is the Ohio State Buckeyes, and they can't participate in national title, but the AP poll can still vote for them to be the national title. Who's going to have the guts in the AP to do it? I don't know if anybody will, but I would like to see it happen. Shared title. That would be hilarious to me. Thus, proving why we need a playoff system, which is coming 1 year too late. Now, speaking of Kansas State and Oregon losing on the same night, the last time number one and number two were beaten on the same day was in 2007. What were those teams, you ask? Well, I'll tell you what those teams were. It was the Missouri Tigers, formerly of the Big 12, now the SEC, and the West Virginia Mountaineers, formerly of the Big East, now in the Big 12. You see where I'm going with this? Speaking of former conferences, the Big 10 is actually now the Big 14. What are they going to change the name anyway? They haven't had 10 teams in the Big 10 in like 20 years. But anyway, the Big Ten is adding Maryland and Rutgers. They're going to join the conference in 2014. I mean, no powerhouse teams by any means, but TV contracts and TV markets for New York and Maryland are very, very huge. Maryland, I think, is a solid football program and really a nice, solid basketball program as well. And Rutgers is ranked currently in the BCS at number 18 at 9-1. So, I think that in 2 or 3 more years, I think the Big Ten, whatever their name's going to be in a couple years, I don't know. I think they're going to look to add more teams, and I think Virginia Tech is a team that's probably going to be a play, and they would love to have Notre Dame, of course. But with the moves that Notre Dame made with the ACC this year, that looks unlikely. But I think the Big Ten is going to add at least 2 more teams in the next 2 to 3 years and go to a 16-team conference. They want to be the first to get there, and I think adding a team like Virginia Tech is definitely a team they should definitely consider, at least in my opinion. But college football, look, this is rivalry week in college football. This is really going to determine how this BCS ranking system is going to play out. Here are the games to look for. There's a plethora of games to look at. You have Notre Dame heading to the Rose Bowl, taking on the underachieving USC Trojans, looking to, obviously, to play spoiler. This thing, USC has lost 3 football games, and they were the preseason number one. Tells you how much meaning you give to preseason polls, right? Starting with the greatest rivalry, and I think in my opinion, one of the greatest rivalries in college football, that is the Ohio State Buckeyes, 11-0, hosting a team from up north. Some may know them as Michigan. I expect the seniors at Ohio State and Braxton Miller, Heisman hopeful, to be ready to fire and go 12-0 and make a statement. As I said earlier, if Notre Dame falls to USC and Ohio State is the only unbeaten, will the AP poll announce them at the end of the season as national champions? I doubt it, but I'd like to see it happen. Also, you have UCLA taking on Stanford. This is going to be a great game. Oklahoma State versus Oklahoma. Again, another great football game. Now, this game right here, Florida State number 10 in the BCS, taking on number 4 Florida. This is a huge game, not only because it's Florida versus Florida State, but also has implications on who could possibly creep up the polls, given a couple of losses with 1, 2, and 3, and maybe play for a national title. Florida State has been disrespected, in my opinion, staying at number 10. They have one loss on the season. Florida, I think Florida State is going to humble Florida this weekend. You have the Civil War game, which the Oregon Ducks versus Oregon State, the Beavers. That is always a good game. Can the Oregon Ducks bounce back and get back in a title hunt? That's a big question. I think losing that game to Stanford put them out. The polls never favored them all year. Then they lost the game. They're going to need a lot of help to get back up there. And of course, it wouldn't be BCS madness without it. And then you have, you know, everybody, you know, I just don't want to see SEC versus SEC again. They're like, oh, we won 6 in a row. Well, nobody had a shot last year to play it. So hopefully we'll see how this plays out. Here's your top 10 as it is right now in the BCS polls, working from number 10 on the way up. Florida State Seminoles, Texas A&M, Stanford Cardinals, LSU Tigers, Kansas State Wildcats, the Oregon Ducks, the Florida Gators, Georgia Bulldogs, Alabama Crimson Tide, and number 1, Notre Dame, the Fighting Irish. A lot of football still to go. You have conference title games, but this weekend is really going to determine the landscape and kind of know what we're looking at this point. Now, let's take a look at our top movies like we do every week on the show. The top movie, starting with number 10, working our way up, is Cloud Atlas at 0.9 million, Tom Hanks film. Here Comes the Boom, 1.2 million. Picture Perfect at 1.2 million. Taken 2 at 2.1 million. Argo, 4 million. The movie Flight with Denzel Washington looks great, 8.6 million. Wreck-It Ralph, animated film, 18.3 million. Lincoln, starring Daniel Day-Lewis, $21 million. The movie Skyfall, new James Bond film, 41.5 million. And Twilight Saga, Breaking Dawn Part 2, Mitt Romney's favorite movie, apparently, $141.3 million. I'm going to repeat that again. Shiny vampires who don't bite people, $141.3 million. I am a shiny vampire. Tell you that. Look, great show tonight. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Mike, great job as always. And thanks to Ed Lanuet and the guys from Shadows Fall as well. Hey, it seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so, everybody.